couch eating potato chips. It's time to stop being a loser and learn how to make $1 million muskie fishing.
How to Make $1 Million Muskie Fishing, the new book by Jay Essey. That's me. It's the only book you'll ever need. Learn how to fish and how to profit from it.
Yeah, all it takes is for you to buy this book and learn how to become a muskie millionaire like Jay Essey.
You want to make big bucks and catch countless big girls? It's time to buy my new book, How to Make $1 Million Muskie Fishing, by me, Jay Essey.
Are you ready to catch big girls?
Big girls?
You ready to get slimed?
Slimed.
It's the prime time to buy JSE's new book, How to Make $1 Million Muskie Fishing. You know you need it.
You know you need it.
You know you want it.
You know you want it.
It's time to get JSE's How to Make $1 Million Muskie Fishing. Jay, tell them how to get the book. How much it is.
If you're done being a loser, it's time to take it to the next step. Call me and I'll sell you how to make $1 million muskie fishing for one easy payment of $1 million.
Operators are standing by. Come out!
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, a Jay Bird. How's she dangling, buddy?
Real good. How are you?
It is freaking unbelievable. Actually, muskie season in Wisconsin. It's. Do you feel better now? Is the seasonal depression gone?
Well, the southern part's open right now, Steve.
It's still sad north of Highway 10.
It's still SAD up here.
It's raining. All over the world. Oh, not long, my friend. Not long. You will be out there wetting your worm all about town. So it's amazing, Jay. You hit that post holidays. You hit the February mark, and it's like exciting. It feels like it's going to be here at any moment, and then it's skullduggery. It's just takes forever. But oh goodness, we have something interesting this week coming up. Cover here in a second, but at least hit the comings and the goings of the muskie shop. I've actually already heard, I was super stoked, Jay. Already heard back from a couple people that like early season trolling with the blade, which is cool. So that we still got some blades left at the muskie shop. If you haven't seen that, check her out. And then what's exciting, that 5-inch freaking Magnus tail.
Yep.
You did that video. The only thing really hit on it. Is Jay did a short with that little dude. And to be honest with you, the story behind that was that the shorter tail wasn't going to happen for a while. And right. Eric one day said, just do it, right? So we already had it made in prototype, so I hadn't really even had them to play with. I mean, we've tested them on the water and then didn't really get any footage of it. But you got that killer short of that dude.
You can see, there's underwater footage. That's the key with those lure demo shorts. You know, you get to see what the thing does, and it's like, it's still got that Magnus roll. It's still got the, the adjustable weight system, of course.
Right.
But you're putting a shorter tail. It's 2 inches shorter, and that thing is it's vibrant.
We didn't know if we were going to, like I said, I didn't know if it was actually going to come out, the shorter tail. Because I got a little sneaky up my sleeve on one more swim bait. You'll hear about that before.
Yep.
But I wish we have done like a bluegill color just for the short ones, because it looks like you caught a bluegill. I'm crushing on that size right now because of that panfish profile. So something to keep in mind when you get your brim spawn and you get your your bedding fish and all those panfish that are feeding up on edges as things warm up, just a tick here, which is kind of neat. So that's kind of been an interesting tool. And speaking of shorts, you finally got Jay Francis Coppola finally got the shot we were looking for on that Swivlo Genesis where you have it down the rod.
Oh,
that was cool.
You saw that?
Yeah, I did.
Wasn't that cool?
Oh,
yeah.
That was cool. So yeah, it's been funsies, but I think we're finally there. Other than what Violent Strike got a new buzzer they came out with, you got some custom collar swimming dogs. It's we're lined up, folks.
Yeah, and we got the MEPS sale going on for the month of May. Musky Killers and B5 Aglias, they're all 15% off.
There you go. Other than that, it's kind of, we're into it. Other than that, then mm-hmm. the restock. Finally, yeah. no more gear. We can talk gear, but it's not like what's coming in and what's going out. Other than there's a Daiwa reel bag, folks. You want to change your success on the water, make sure you have a reel bag. I'm teasing. Where did Tom get these? How many Pro-Rexes did you have to buy before they dropped these off? That's kind of cool. Well, sorry, I'm looking.
Yeah.
Can't live without it.
For those that have a lot of gear and travel a lot, hey, it makes sense.
You know, come on. No, it's cool. But what else? Mm-hmm. Oh, this looks like a Jody Michael project. Musky Fishing Toolkit. I was in the car the other day, and she said, oh, okay, yeah, that's one of those numbers. That's cool. All your tools in one place.
Yep. We put that together last week as well.
You got jaw spreaders. Well, I don't know.
What? Tom Spoon Kit. I mean, you Spoon name it. There's kit. A whole bunch of cool stuff coming around.
Wow, folks, calm down. Calm down. People are crashing on the interstate right now. There's a Spoon Kit.
Yeah.
Flip their car, losing their mind. No, that's handy dandy on the musky fishing tools kit. I can dig it. Got your Schmitty file in there.
Darn tootin'.
No, it's good stuff. Finally, the season is upon the Wisconsinites. Jay, and correct me if I'm wrong, the river by your house, and which is the river you live under that bridge next to, basically you're basically, you know, there to report on river conditions, and it's easy when you live under an underpass. You were down for like the last couple of years. Is it up to full or is it above the edges?
It was remarkably low not even 2 months ago, and it's full.
There you go.
It's full, and we haven't had that much rain and haven't had that much snow melt off. Guess they've been letting less water out of that particular flowage system. So, yeah, it's all full. And believe me, I drove by this morning to check it out. There's a lot of boats there.
Really?
So, yeah, walleye season opened today and all that. So walleye and pike, you know, so everything except muskie. So, and it's just a beautiful day, you know, like low 70s, no wind, sunny. So everybody's getting
If you've been cooped up all freaking
For sure. Yeah,
absolutely. But that's cool that, you know, the overabundance of water finally. I mean, because, you know,
on the other hand, Steve, I went by. I remember you called yesterday and I was checking out a few lakes, mm-hmm. and there's a small lake not far from me. And I was like, maybe I can go out here bass fishing today. It's so low, I don't think I can get my boat in the landing. So,
really?
The natural lakes, there's still a water deficit over the last couple of years. Some lakes are down a little bit, but. Not this is a really small 50-acre deal,
varying overall. Degrees. Well, that was one of those things of there's obviously guys that were going out and doing it, but the last couple of years you didn't hear many Northwoods guys hitting too many of the river systems. I mean, because they were just you could go by, what is that, the Wisconsin right there by you coming out of the, what is that, Joe?
Yeah, Wisconsin River, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where you're driving by it. And I mean, it's a puddle. There's puddles. There's not pockets, pools, and eddies. There's like puddles and then, you know, shallows. I mean, it was basically down to stream level is what it seemed like in a lot of sections. But, you know, that's cool that at least, you know, that it's high now. Hopefully that'll kind of allow some river fishing, you know, because that's such a helpful thing. I mean, when you get into like I don't think anybody's going to have a slow start. We'll see, because I've already heard reports out of the South that some of these fish haven't spawned. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what Herbeck was saying just last week. Yeah. When we talked. Yeah.
So there.
Yeah. We'll find out shortly here. Yeah.
Well, shall see. Speaking of Herbeck. Mm. Wow. The proverbial, the purview of pervasive Herbeck. So
big Herbie in the house.
Well, here's the story in all seriousness.
Okay.
Steve calls me this week. Or actually, and I knew he was going to kind of take action on the topic of live scope. Right. Hot button issue. It is kind of the argument of catch and release. It's the argument it's the hot button topic in muskie fishing.
Right? It is.
It is. It, and across the board, everyone has an opinion. And I'll say this because I'm going to talk to him here in a minute, possibly one of his cohorts, and discuss this topic. I think I'm the only angler at this point that has it in how to do these tactics in a book. I believe, you know, I mean, in Next Level Muskie Fishing, in my book, I talk about everything that's kind of on the list of how to use live imaging while trolling, open water fishing, everything. So I feel like it's appropriate when talking to him on the subject. And I mean, Herbeck is like the abusive uncle I never had, right? I mean, we're very close. But when it comes to the live scope thing, obviously, my opinions are my own. So I think it's going to be best to just kind of just straight journalism this matter with him. Just because, I mean, for me, there's so many voices in that conversation, and I've expressed, you know, I've expressed at different times my thoughts with it. I've said, you know, it's the genie's out of the bottle, or, you know, wish we could go back from it, or that's all irrelevant. So I just want to kind of preface that, just kind of come at this, it just try to get questions and answers and not really interject. You know what I'm saying, Jay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know? Because, I mean, it is what it is. It's from 2 years ago, it's a different conversation as far as live scope. To be honest with you, one that I'm tired of hearing about. You know, it's funny. And the one piece of opinion, Jay, it's like watching the Zoomers fight the Boomers. And I'm from that age group where you're always just kind of in the middle and you throw your hands up and go, meh. Why not both? You know, like the girl from the taco shell commercial. But everybody's got their stance on things. And like I said, I'm not one to, I'm definitely not one to make vast commentary on live scope and applications after putting it in print of this is how you do it. You know?
Understood. Sure.
So I think that that's a bias. And so, like I said, talking, I'm just going to try to hit just the questions and try to see it from both sides. I think that's always the best thing, because in the little write up we did on the app, I think I tried to keep it, report on the story and move on. And I think the only thing I said is, you know, both sides of the aisle have shortcomings in their arguments, and that's with most things. So we'll see, Jay. But I'll try to play Barbara Walters here and keep her
right.
You know.
Yeah, this should be very interesting.
We'll see. Mm-hmm. More on that later. Here she blows. All right, guys. I have Steve Herbeck and Cal Ritchie on the phone. How are you guys doing this evening?
Great, Steve.
Great.
Good deal. So, as mentioned before these guys joined us here on the program, we're here to discuss the live scope conversation, particularly on Eagle Lake. So I think, gentlemen, a great place to start for anybody listening here, I just want to kind of read the protect the tradition, preserve the challenge, the flyer that's making the rounds, if you guys will allow me to do that real quick, okay? So for listeners, there is a kind of a summary that has been put out here. And again, it starts with protect the tradition, preserve the challenge. Attention, Eagle Lake anglers, please help protect and preserve Eagle Lake's world-class muskie fishery. Eagle Lake's naturally reproducing muskies have supported a world-class trophy fishery through catch and release. While most release fish survive, repeated handling increases mortality, a concern amplified by rising angler efficiency with forward-facing sonar. As passionate anglers, your choices on the water matter. Please help support sustainable muskie fishing by following these best practices. Use forward-facing sonar responsibly, requesting no use of forward-facing sonar or at a minimum one transducer, and no use of gas motor while fishing muskies.
Avoid sharpshooting, road hunting, or spotlighting. These tactics use sonar to quickly scan deep or open water and aggressively target muskies. A method of concern for long-term fish health and sustainability. Respect depth limits. Refrain from targeting muskies holding in or suspended that depths deeper than 20 feet, regardless of the depth being fished. Keep them wet. Unhook your muskie while it's still in the net and in the water. Limit air exposure and consider releasing directly without lifting the fish from the water. Take quick boatside photos. Snap your memories with the fish in or just above the water. It's better for the muskie and still makes for an epic shot. Go barbless where you can, especially when fishing with large rubber baits like tubes or bulldogs. Consider pinching barbs or using barbless hooks to minimize injury. All species anglers, be ready. Muskie encounters happen while bass or walleye fishing. Make sure you're equipped with a large landing net, bolt cutters, long nose pliers, and a jaw spreader. Your voluntary compliance will help ensure Eagle Lake remains one of the world's premier muskie fisheries for future generations. Messaging endorsed by the Eagle Lake Conservation Group, Eagle Lake Resorts, local businesses, conservation-minded guides, and anglers of Eagle Lake. So, gentlemen, that is the mantra or kind of the encapsulation of what you guys have put out. So I think to get it kicked off here, kind of tell me about why, the what, when, why are you doing this, and what is the thought behind it?
Well, Steve, it's very apparent what's going on in other parts of the country, but nothing's getting done. Okay. There's huge repercussions going on in Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, and elsewhere too.
Okay.
We're basically the only group.
Let me ask you that real quick before we do that, right? Just for clarification's sake, what are those repercussions? That was kind of an overarching statement that just said there's major repercussions. Please elaborate on what those repercussions are and what the consequences of them are.
Well, first of all, there's very, noticeable and apparent mortality rates going up on your Minnesota lakes and northern Wisconsin lakes where sharpshooting is very, very prevalent. We just started seeing in the last couple of years, that group of type of anglers showing up on Eagle Lake. Eagle Lake sets up as a sniper's dream. It's got many relatively smaller basins by Canadian standards with high populations of pelagic forage, and that's where our trophy muskies inhabit a lot of the time, sliding up on structure where we fish them here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, well, we don't see it here in Canada, because that's why we're being proactive, because it hasn't become the major deal in Canada yet, but it's coming. And we don't want to be in the situation that Minnesota is, saying, well, now we got a problem. What are we going to do about it? So this is a proactive. This Congress and all the concerned people are really the tip of the spear of a very, very important movement that I think is going to be coming around full circle very shortly, and the Congress has a history of positive reactions to protecting Eagle Lake. It's the only lake I know of in anywhere in the country, North America or Canada, that there's a night fishing ban that they got through to save the walleye fishery. It turned it into one of the best walleye fisheries in Ontario. But what a lot of people don't realize is one of the reasons Eagle Lake is so damn good is because our muskies were also protected 50% of every day. So that had a huge impact too. Those Clearwater muskies on Eagle Lake are like little kids sitting on a corner in Chicago wearing a Bulls jacket when it comes to night fishing. So a lot has gone into already keeping Eagle Lake one of the finest fisheries in the world. Mm-hmm. And we want to keep it that way. And a lot of people are looking at us to see, is this going to work? Can we use this as a model? And we're proud to be in that stage. And I didn't need this stuff. I didn't need it for notoriety. I had a nice, cool, calm way of ending my career the few next years I got going, and peaceful, doing what I love to do and everything. But when I look at all these resorts and these guys, I look at them and I think just the same as when I was 35 years ago, the dreams, the aspirations of making their living, doing this on this wonderful body of water. And I just feel compelled both spiritually and morally to be a part of this this sphere and let the chips fall as they may.
One thing I wanted to ask, and I think it's a fair question here. The opening line, right? Protect the tradition, preserve the challenge, right?
That, by the way, was coined by Cal's wife, and I think it's just so awesomely cool slogan.
I wanted to ask regarding that. The notion of, like, say, preserving the challenge of muskie fishing, there's an implication that live sonar makes muskie fishing easier or too easy, right? How do you unpack that notion that the stoppage of terms of the tactic known as sharpshooting, road hunting, all these different things, right? How is that preserving a challenge, or how do you unpack that? Because the notion of preserving the challenge implicates that it is now easier.
I just think it's easier because now you can find the fish so much easier with forward facing sonar in real time. And now, you know, all these fish that you couldn't find before, you can follow them, you can find them, you can chase them as long as you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a total game changer. I'm not saying you're always going to catch those fish, but they don't have a place to hide now. There's nowhere for them to hide and relax or whatever you'd like to call it, because there's someone can always find them now. So right. I think that's a big thing with it.
And what we're at this point, we're not asking for a total ban, although several of the resorts, you know, have gone to the point of that's what they want to do, is request that their guests coming leave their scopes at home. And in many cases, the guests coming said, don't worry about it. We don't need it on Eagle. You know, no problem. You know, I'm sure there's going to be some repercussions here and there, but in the long run, it's going to bring a class of fishermen to Eagle Lake that are coming there because it's being protected and preserved. And I think it will do nothing but help the resorts in the future. Now, what we're advocating is to consider not using it, but we're allowing and advocating a use of it minimally, like with one scope and no power sniping over open water, using your electric while you're fishing structure, and then it's really nothing more than side imaging or down imaging real time. And I'm going to test the fact. Because, you know, I mean, I do use it probably 40% of the time during the season, not so much to find fish as to help my guests use their baits properly. I use it to learn. I've been in this game over 40 years. I still try to learn something every day. And I'm telling you, the use of this technology conservatively has taught me things that I never even believed what these fish do. So if it comes to a total ban, like I was hoping this never happened, but it did. If it comes to a total ban, I'm going to be back right where I was, but I will have learned a hell of a lot that I wouldn't have learned before. So it can be used as a very constructive tool, not as a raping of the resource type of deal, like multiple use transducers and 4 to 5 miles an hour covering 4,000 acres a day, you know, type of deal. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of our fish are suspended a lot of the time of the year because all those basins got whitefish and ciscos and everything else in them. So we actually, they slide up and they slide off, and that's when we make contact with them. So when, you know, those fish have a sanctuary like that, you know, it just makes for, you know, a preservation of the genetic diversity that the Eagle Lake possesses. And And let's face it, the biggest muskies are the ones that they're targeting out in open water with the sharpshooting. And let's face it, the bigger, the older, the easier there is for metallic to occur versus a 40, 42, 44-inch teenager versus a 25-year-old 52 to 55-incher.
Let's unpack that for a moment, if you will, because you've said a lot there, right? So as far as and let me at least first, let's say someone does not know what we're talking about. I'm going to kind of give the synopsis of sharpshooting here, and you guys correct me if you're wrong as far as what you're considering, which is using forward-facing sonar to cover open water basins and directly making a targeted cast at a fish that you see on live imaging. Would that kind of get around it? And as a summary?
Yeah, some right. guys just drive around all day.
Some guys this, some guys, yeah, understood, yeah. There's different ways of doing it, but for the uninitiated is what I'm trying to do. So, explain to me how that's a negative or destructive practice.
Go ahead, Kill.
Sorry, what was the question again?
My question would be just the act of sharpshooting, right? How is that negatively affecting Eagle Lake in particular?
Well, because you're targeting fish that you wouldn't know there is in the first place.
Okay.
Second of all, the more people using it, the more fish that are getting targeted easier, the more fish that are getting caught, which is more handling of fish, which is eventually going to lead to more mortality.
Right.
And we're in a body of water. We don't have stocking, none of that stuff. Right. We have natural good genetics, and that's what we're trying to preserve.
Okay. Let me ask you this to that point, right? So the crux of that is, so what you're saying is, the more people do this, the more fish that are encountered, therefore the assumption of more mortality, correct?
Yes. Okay. The more fish are eventually.
So, you know, it, from that angle, right, is that what's that increased rate of mortality? Because with an unskilled angler with live scope, have an increased catch rate, or is there still a modicum of skill to capitalize on that technology?
Well, you know, the deal of it is, one of the main deals of it is that as you get into July and August and the thermocline pushes down and stuff like that, a lot of these bigger fish are holding at that depth where things start getting dangerous, 25, 30 feet. And with sniping and stuff, you know, covering all that ground, you encounter these fish in what has always been their sanctuary area. And when you start targeting fish in that 25 to 30 foot, even plus range, the mortality goes way up just from the stress, potential bear trauma, ta-da. So if say a guy is using a brick and a rope for a locator, or he's using forward-facing sonar, but he's fishing structure and stuff like that, and he's catching maybe, say, 10 fish, 8 to 10 fish a trip. Well, when he can cover 4,000 acres in a day sharpshooting from depths from 5 to 35 feet and increase that catch rate by 2 or 3 times, the estimate of mortality is somewhere between 10 and 30%, no matter what you do. You know, no matter how good you are, no matter what, over a course of time of 10 to 30%. Now, you increase the catch rate, particularly fish in vulnerable situations, up to 2, 3, maybe 4 times, it's just common sense that you're going to have more mortality. And people say, well, you know, they're finding fish floating all over on leech and stuff like that. On Eagle, our temperatures maybe stay just a little bit cooler. And the only fish that are going to float are those with barotrauma, because the ones that just are so stressed that they go to the bottom and die, the crabs pop them and turtles pop them. They don't come up. You can't count on making a true estimate of what the mortality rate is, except that it is there, and any amount is too much. And when you start doubling it and tripling it, then things start happening that cannot be reversed.
Let me play devil's advocate on that point, if you will. Just a question, okay? So, it's confirmation bias. If you're looking for dead fish, you'll find dead fish. If you're looking for red cars, you'll see only red cars on the highway, right?
Okay. So
it is at some point the conversation to be had regarding confirmation bias. You know, you said Leech Lake, or you say the fish that you're seeing there, and then yet it's undefined as to how that impact is there. How can that be attributed to people sharpshooting? How is that how can you attribute that increased mortality to the act of sharpshooting?
Well, they got in some of the basins out there, particularly in June and July. I mean, there might be 20, 30 boats doing it. And all of a sudden, whereas before there was no flowing fish, all of a sudden now they're finding 3, 4, 5 fish a day, you know, floating, dead.
Okay.
Is that just because of disease? No, it's because of all them sharpshooters.
Okay. So,
I mean, that's just common sense. I mean, yes. I mean, do we need scientific studies and all this and that? You know, that's what some, you know, biologists and people are saying. But the problem of that scenario is it takes a lot of time. It's usually done by people that aren't even fishermen. They come up with results that we can't even understand. And by that time, if it is a positive confirmation that it's harming the resource, it's already too late. Now we're talking generations to restore it, if it can be done. This is what we're doing, is a proactive approach to eliminate having to have some type of a reactive solution, which we just don't have, other than nature itself.
Right, due to a lack of stocking and things of that nature. Absolutely. Like I said, I think it just bears questions for people to kind of understand kind of that your thought process here.
Right. And, you know, and everybody, you know, different views and viewpoints and stuff, it's what makes the world go round. And sometimes opposing views are how sometimes very constructive answers come about. Now, if it's just because you've been on the bandwagon of social media and never even used, who is better to know what can happen than somebody who has used it? Not people who have just got on the bandwagon and want to be able to bitch about it and cause, you know, arguments behind their keyboard. We want people to be proactive, you know, come to Eagle, enjoy it, spend their money, spend their wonderful time and memories with their families, and have it still be available for those down in the future, and all these wonderful people who are giving it to them with their resorts and their 18 to 20 hour a day workloads to do it, you know, they're for them down the line. So, you know, it goes deeper than just fish too, right? You know what I'm saying?
So, something I want to kind of pick your brains about, because there's a section in kind of your treatise that you've come up with there, where it talks about not targeting muskies that are holding deeper than 20 feet, right? And then I look at the actions you're taking to ask people to self-regulate, because one of my concerns would be, like, overarching regulation. If you look at any kind of governmental body, whether it be a Canadian Ministry of Fishing or a Department of Natural Resources here in the States, the regulations are generally far broader to kind of encapsulate everything. Because if you look at, say, a situation where people are unwilling to self-regulate, you end up with big, gross generalities in as far as regulations, right? So,
well, that's definitely what we're going to find out.
Right.
I have confidence that people, particularly as this comes to light, and you know as well that I'm going to try and take this international, both to Canada and North America, you know, because you know, I think there's a circle coming about, and and more realization of what is really at stake here. And I'm hoping that many anglers will take a positive stance on it. And if it and it may not. This is all an experiment. But at least we're trying something that nobody else is so far. You know? And if it does, that's great. And if it doesn't, well, then they're going to have to go the legal route and have a total ban and not have the ability to use it discretionarily, you know, with common sense. Now, the thing of it is when we talked about this deeper than 20 feet, that's kind of a high number. I would say, you know, we could go a little bit, you know, 20, 25 feet. That's not saying that you can't be fishing. I made a living back in the day fishing just like Joe did and Rizzo and everybody else did, fishing suspended fish, just drifting across the lake, casting over 60, 70, 80 feet of water and catching fish on bucktails and even topwater sometimes. But you know, when you start targeting fish that are deeper than 20 feet, 20, 25 feet, say at 20 feet, if there's a fish at 30, 35 feet, and it's active and it's hunting, and your bait's at 20, it'll fly up so fast you won't even know what happened. And it could, and if it's grabbing a live bait fish, it goes right back down. Nothing happens to it. But if it flies up to 35 feet and grabs your bait at 20, 25, and you pull it to the surface in 75, 78 degree water, that fish is screwed. Okay, so you know, it's not saying that you fish, you can't have your boat deeper than 20 feet. We're saying fish that are suspended, don't be targeting fish that are 30, 35 feet. You know, if they're 20 feet and up, it, you know, doesn't matter. And if fish are at a major part of the season because of water temps and everything else, a major part of those fish out in open water are deeper than, say, 25 feet. Well, then we fish the edges, we fish the structures, and leave those fish out in over deep water alone. And that's just what it's going to take: education, it's going to take, you know, common sense, and it's going to take a feeling of purpose in doing the right thing. And we're hoping that that's what anglers are going to show.
You know, one thing I wanted to ask you, in just this regard. There's definitely a constituency of people in muskie fishing that's how they like to fish, right? And it's definitely a newer thing. But in that regard, is this kind of like, at the end of the day, do you look at it, say, with the motor trolling bans in Wisconsin, where, you know, originally the thought was they were not going to allow motor trolling because it would decimate the fisheries, and then it goes through the cycle. It's you know, some exceptions were made, but, you know, it took decades before they brought that back. And at the end of the day, it really wasn't a net negative or a net positive, because I wanted to kind of discuss this and I try to keep
it. But they also limited it, just like right. We're limiting livestock. It went to one rod per person, right. Maximum of three in the boat.
Now,
there was a compromise there.
Something I want to address and for both of you, and I'll try to keep my opinion out as much as possible here, just asking questions the best I can. But
yeah,
I can share experience. And all three of us being fishing guides, we can do this. I do not believe that, and correct me if wrong, from my viewpoint in the world, I do not believe that the vast majority of my clients, even given a boat with 2 to 3 panoptics units, could accomplish sharpshooting or really wrap their head around it to do that act, right? Where if I give you a boat with panoptics on it and I head you out in the right direction, right, and say, go do this, they're really not going to have a high level of success doing it. Would you agree with that? Like, as far as your average weekend angler.
At the beginning.
Right.
But you get caught up in it. And it catches, it gets...
Right, you're not just going to...
Especially if you're spending 2 or 3 days with a guide that is doing it.
Right.
And is very proficient at it.
Right.
You can learn pretty damn quick.
And that's where I was going with this, where that I've had it, and Cal, I'm sure you have, or Steve, you have, you know, a client sees the live imaging on your boat, and 2 weeks later, they're texting you, hey, I bought the same unit you have. How do you set it? Or what do you do? Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And again, preface this, last year I had like three on the boat. I got one this year. I've been there, done that, right? Where I believe, and where I'm trying to go with this is that this is not a overarching thing of people that are visiting Eagle Lake. It is just a constituency of people that this is the way they like to fish. They're doing that, and that's a concern that it will grow and develop because of how that act is done. Because what I'm getting at is, like, if you look at open water targeting fish, I don't think trolling motoring around the bay or trolling motor around, okay, where do you go, things of that nature. But, you know, I just wanted you guys to elaborate some of the things that you've seen that brought things to light where you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I was told, you know, hey, this past year, there's five boats going in a row at 4 miles an hour. Is that something you've observed, or is that something that's alarming to you, where this is not like Johnny Weekend that has one Panoptix unit on his boat? Am I correct in that assessment?
Yes, yeah. Yes, and yes.
Okay, so explain to me, if you will, and because I kind of know what I was told this year and what we had seen and whatnot, but I think let me preface with this. In conversation of this nature, there's always this innocuous they, right? There's an innocuous entity that is doing something that is possibly detrimental to a resource, right? And I'm not saying names, or I'm not saying this or geographical reason, but I'm going, please explain, Steve, what brought this subject to light for you and started your concerns of what you're observing this year as far as how sharpshooting was being used and maybe, in your opinion, abused on Eagle.
Well, you know, Cal has been always a very strong opponent of it. And you got to remember, me and Cal go back over 35 years. He was the first guy that I hired when I bought AML. And he wasn't a guy, I don't even know if he had a fishing pole at first, but he was, you know, he had plumbing, you know, experience, and he was good with people, and he became the doc, and it quickly became evident his desire was above ordinary when it came to fishing. He started taking guests out after his shifts. I started setting him up with equipment. Pretty soon he was out on the water full time. And he worked for me until I sold the place. And then he kind of went on his own with all the other resorts on the lake. But we've always kept in touch. We always share information. We're down there like brothers. We went through a lot building Andy Meyer's Lodge over many years. And so we were keeping in touch. And he started expressing his concerns. And, I mean, I wasn't seeing it as much as him because I'm only there 90 days. The season, and he's there the full season, and I try and kind of keep to myself as much as I can, and he was seeing a lot more of it, and it brought to my attention, and I started noticing it, and then you hear, you know, stories about it from different people of unbelievable amount of catches over open water and going back to Minnesota and telling all the snipers that, hey, screw Leech, come on up to Eagle Lake. They're like virgins up there. They're stupid as hell. And so it became very apparent that the wave of the expert snipers were going to make Eagle a prime target. And we wanted to stop that and be proactive in it before it got to a point where it got really ugly. You know what I mean? So that's basically where this started. And then, you know, because Cal's at all the other resorts, working out of every resort, you know, obviously those kind of information gets shared, and the resorts started becoming aware of it. A lot of the Canadians didn't even know what it was. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But because we were still behind the times compared, you know, to the Minnesota and Wisconsin markets. So they started to become more aware of it, and they realized that their future was at stake, and not just monetarily, but the whole deal of what Canadian wilderness and Eagle Lake fishing is all about. And so, you know, they got together and decided something needed to be done, and Cal and Charlene from Eagle Island Lodge, which she's kind of like the, you know, she's really good at, you know, putting stuff together and computer stuff and everything else. They came to me and asked me if and even though they know that I used it, they also knew that I used it very conservatively and with discretion. All the conservation policies on Eagle Lake are things that we started 35 years ago, and the other resorts capitalized and took it into effect, and it made a big difference. They know my heart is for the lake. They asked me to come become involved. Like I said, I really, you know, didn't know if I wanted not a bullseye on my back. I've had plenty of them there over the years, you know. But it became very apparent to me that this was a cause that needed somebody that wasn't afraid to speak their mind, and that had, you know, I have a lot of markers out there with some very important people that believe in me, and I'm calling them in to get this message across that is clear and you know, over as much ground as possible. And I'm very proud to have been asked to be a part of it. So here we go.
Here we go.
And yeah. Understood. Well, Cal, you know, to the original point there, as far as what have you observed that you found to be alarming?
Well, I mean, the last few years now, you know, you'll get boats with the big motor. They'll drive by you scanning. All of a sudden they see a fish. They'll cut in front of you, start casting that fish, covering water, and they just keep doing that. So, you know, it's like the title says, preserve the challenge. Where's the challenge when you can just drive around, find them in real live time, and chase them? Mm-hmm. Musky fishing, for me, it's about the thrill of the hunt, thrill of the chase, trying to figure them out. Not driving around, looking for them on my graph like that, and then targeting them.
Right.
You know?
Understood.
So, and that's, you're just seeing more and more of it now. And, you know, last year got even worse, watching the guys fishing the open water and the open channels and catching them left and right and all on forward-facing sonar. And, you know, and they're targeting them deeper than they should. And, you know, and it just keeps going on from there. So,
well,
you know, and our fish, we right. need to protect it.
I understand that. And I think, you know, the counterpoint to that would be, They're doing just what everybody else is doing. If they're catching these fish, they're releasing them. So my question would be on that front, if you want to phrase it that way, how much is too much? Right? How much is too much? Because you're going, you know, as far as if they're coming through and they're able to pick off a bunch of fish, right? Is it simply a matter of they're catching too many fish? Or is it simply a matter of the because they've caught so many fish, surely the mortality's higher? Like I said, that's one sticking point I think a lot of people would ask. And I've seen, you know, as far as the discourse in the subject matter, which is, well, they're catching them and they're releasing them. They're just catching more.
Go ahead, Steve.
No, go ahead.
I just think the more they're able to target and find where they normally wouldn't without forward-facing sonar, that you're going to have more mortality because they're just getting handled too much more and targeted too much more easier. It's going to lead to more mortality. I mean, how can it not? You know what I mean?
Steve, what were you going to say?
Well, I mean, he basically said it. I mean, I don't begrudge people catching fish. I mean, I've had 20, 25 fish weeks, you know, casting weeds when the fish were in the weeds. But, you know, we're not, that's traditional challenge fishing, mm-hmm. you know, or rock edges. That's traditional challenge fishing. That's not just driving. I see guys never get out of their seat the whole day, stopping, slamming their boat in reverse, and having a guy sitting on the bump seat on the front, never making a cast till the guy slams the motor into neutral and reverse, and the guy makes a cast at a fish. Now, what a lot of people don't realize is those type of fish, you usually catch them on the first or second cast. But yet these guys are chasing them sometimes for miles, throwing many, many, many casts at them with different baits, thinking they're going to get them to bite. And all you're doing is conditioning fish to the fact that, you know, these fish are smart on Eagle. Eagle Lake fish are, you know, Steve, you fished Eagle Lake since you were a little kid.
Yeah.
They're some of the
smartest fish,
muskies in the world.
And to that point, I'm again devil's advocate, and let me preface, folks, we've been at this for a while. There's probably no place more I'd want to protect myself either. But again, allow me to play journalist and devil's advocate here, so we can just get it out on the floor, right?
Yeah,
you just said, well, they get conditioned, they know not to do it. So is there a breaking point where live scope is no longer impactful and this is just a drop in the bucket?
No, because it's their attitude. It's what's going on in the environment. Is it a bite coming on? You know, is it the moon phase coming on? Is it the weather coming in? You know, and stuff like that. That determines how many fish bite, regardless if you're fishing structure or open water. But when you can cover 20 times the water in a day, what does that do as far as odds, Steve? You know what I'm saying? It just, you know, everything multiplies.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
I think.
And you're fishing fish that normally through most of the year, when they are out there and they're not sliding up on structure, they're in a peaceful kind of sanctuary type of mode. And many times holding deeper than you should be fishing for them. So, you know, I mean, it's like Cal said, it's just common sense that there's going to be, you know, more abuse and more of the resource, more handling, more mortality. And that's what we want to stop before it gets to that point. It's already getting there, but we aren't on the verge of disaster like some bodies of water. So it's all a proactive deal.
Right, right.
And that's the Canada, that's the way Canada. I have to commend the Canadian fisheries because they've always been proactive rather than reactive like the United States. They're not stocking walleyes. They're not stocking bass. They're not stocking muskies. Mm-hmm. You know, they put in, they went from a six fish limit to a slot fit, to a slot and two fish per day. And people just keep coming because the fishing's great. They catch 100 walleyes a day, even if you're an idiot. Mm-hmm. They don't need to keep and kill all these fish. So, you know, I commend them for being, you know, proactive in how they manage the fisheries. And, you know, 54 size limit, first place that happened was Canada. You know, even total catch and release on Lac Seul, first place that happened in Canada. You know, so, you know, it's just I really believe that down the road, they're going to make the moves anyway to protect the resource when they get the proof that it's going to be a major deal in Canadian waters. And Eagle Lake is more proactive and more regulated than any lake in Ontario, and it's a damn good thing.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this as far as, and again, and just to reiterate the point, you know, in your treatise here you've put out, it doesn't say no live scope. It's basically at the end of, again, the summary of it I would take away is stop driving around on the big engine and sharpshooting, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep, correct.
At this point,
that's where
we're leaving it up. At this point, we're leaving it up to anglers to conservatively police themselves and respect the resource. If it doesn't work out, and more aggressive measures will be taken, pure and simple.
Well,
it's up to them.
And the question I would have is this. You go, okay, so do you think it's negative for the fishery if, say, I pull up in Buchan, right? and I just said, I'm going to sharpshoot, but I'm going to only use my trolling motor. Do you think it's a matter of coverage and encounter? Is it like, is the goal to slow down the amount of water you're able to cover? Is it to curtail sharpshooting entirely?
It's both. It's both. You could certainly still sharpshoot using your electric, but you ain't going to cover near the water. You know, you're not going to have multiple units. You know, you're not going to be covering 300, you know, 180 degrees around you, 120 feet out or even more.
Right.
Now they got transducers that'll go as far as 200 feet or more.
Right.
So, you know, it's going to cut down the coverage area. And you can definitely still
and that's,
do it.
And that's something, again, you just said something worth touching on. Again, back to skill level, right?
Yeah.
Is... I just got off the water a little bit ago. My front unit was on, right? I'm always watching figure eights with this thing, but there is a conversation to be had about, okay, in all seriousness, average Johnny or somebody that's not spending the time, half of them can't look 80 feet out and tell you it's a muskie, much less when you're running 120 at 6 miles an hour. That's a bit of a developed skill. You know what I'm saying? Is something that you guys had touched on before, that this is not the average guy doing this. It's kind of a developed skill.
It's getting to the point where the technology is getting to the point where it doesn't take that much.
Not much,
doesn't take much because of social media and YouTube. People learn a lot
But with that question, and I haven't, the new live image, the 360 imaging with Hummingbird, right? What's your feelings on that? Is it, if somewhere to go with I can't remember exactly which one it is, the Mega Live, the spinny do, Steve, the one that spins around and does it in real time around you, whatever the heck that model is.
Well, it's not real time, but it's 360.
Yeah.
It's basically side imaging that revolves 360. Around. Instead of 180 off to the side of the boat.
I mean, do you feel that that's the same level of self-regulation should be done with a technology of that nature?
Well, I don't think it's not real time, you know, and it's been around for 5-6 years. I haven't heard too many people, you know, complaining about that too much, although one of the things as well, if you're gonna ban live scope, then you gotta ban all the other stuff, and let's go back to a rock and rope, you know. But
please,
you know, we gotta start someplace, you know, and the most effective and the most easily exploited is live scoping, sniping, you know, I don't know where is it gonna end. Where's it gonna end?
That's the thing, and this is, I guess, I'm trying to be non-opinionated and just try to get the point, but it, just some commentary here, which is,
well, you know what, something that's really alarming. This tells you where possibly there is no end, because Garmin, Hummingbird, Lowrance, all are exempt from federal excise tax through the government that all other sporting goods companies and tackle companies have to pay. So why is that?
Well, that's...
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of that has to do with the
government's got huge government contracts.
Right. That's what I was about
We know how government works. So are they going to allow it to be banned?
No.
I think the only way that I see it can be banned is individual tournaments, individual lake associations like we're doing on Eagle, although it could maybe be different in Canada. Canada is different than the U.S.
That's a whole other conversation, which is, you know, if there were going to be... I'm not saying I'm for or against, but when you look at the evaluation of those corporations... They got more money and more attorneys. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to happen. And then, I've conducted commercial bathymetry studies for it as a captain before. And it's just like, okay, this is a government contract with company X, Y, and Z that, they also make consumer electronics. Yeah, I mean that. You know what I'm saying? Those are government. So yeah, you're not gonna get it from the top down at all. You know.
Well, that's why we elected to go to this right off the bat, rather than sit around and wait to see what the studies say and then get turned down.
Right.
We are trying to teach and educate the anglers what the ramifications will be if they don't voluntarily comply and try and be a part of this movement. Mm-hmm. It's for their future. It's for their kids' future. It's for generations to come, for Christ's sakes. How can anglers not realize that? I hope that my faith is, you know, is shown through this as we move forward.
Well,
you know, I probably will be disappointed, but I'm hoping not. I've seen a big swing, Steve, in this last 3 weeks, because 4 weeks since I've become involved in this, I've seen a huge swing of people becoming very more conscious of it. Yeah, there's always your people that are going to be on the other side of the fence, but that's the way it is with everything, you know? We just got to go with the majority and try and make a difference.
Well, something I think that has an argument I've heard and I've read that I think has some validity that's kind of against your thoughts. And it's, again, it's a top down thing that the guiding community, the Muskie guiding community at large, popularized the usage of live imaging for Muskies. I don't think there's any. I'm not saying every guide did it. I'm saying most notable guides have used that technology, learned from that technology, and it does seem duplicitous when you come back and say, hey, don't use this, right? But, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it seems like one of those things where you go, you said earlier, you have to use this to understand what the possible negative impacts are in some capacity. But like, how do you rectify that? Is it this truly a genie's out of the bottle moment and we all wish we could put it back in? Or what's your thoughts when you go, if you were speaking to someone that says, hey, you've used this, you've made money using this, I just want to use it on my 1 week a trip. I got one trip a year and I just want to catch some fish. Why am I at fault?
I get it. But what I'm saying is the circle that I'm seeing is some guys that are very, very professional and ain't gonna listen to nothing because they're all about the ego of showing 55 to 58 inch fish and they're badasses and all this and that. But yet there's a number of very high profile professional anglers, guides and anglers that have been using it to a high level of skill that are now backing down, fishing more structure, realizing, you know, what the ramifications are. And that's, I think, just what I'm hoping continues to move forward with. And when they see fisheries, people caring about them and not just, can I catch more big ones than the next guy? You know what I'm saying? So can I put more on Facebook? Can I pump my chest even more? You know, yes. There's that argument that it's the professionals and the guides that are using it to try and keep up with the Joneses. Well, a lot of it's happened since COVID, because since COVID, it seems like everybody's a guide. And it has to do with social media and with LiveScope. It has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, correct.
Well, it's a different world for sure as far as that. I mean, I think that's an overarching thing that's just systemic of social media and of the modern era. There are not too many people that quietly catch a fish and don't share it. Right. And that's a hey, I could do a long diatribe on that one, which, you know, is it about look what I did, or is it about personal enjoyment? That's something that I, and again, forget the opinion piece, just going in a conversation now. So, yeah, I'll throw some opinion. But
yeah,
for me, I find it hard as a guide to And again, I can do it. I know how to sharpshoot. I was probably one of the very first early ones that went, oh, shit, you can do this. And talked about it on the podcast, wrote about all kinds of stuff. But you go, man, I don't enjoy it. Right. And it's not because, okay, I'm not going to catch a fish. It's because it just doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't feel as organic, you know, which is, well, again,
it takes that heart pumping instantaneous thrill of excitement that happens when a muskie comes out of nowhere. You know, I mean, it is kind of cool if you're watching structure and you're watching your customers lure to make sure they're working it right, and all of a sudden a fish screams up on it, starts flying in behind his bait, and you tell him, get ready, here it comes, and all of a sudden that fish is right there at the boat. You still get that excitement of that figure eight. You know what I mean?
I mean, the question is, let me ask you this, just out of curiosity, you know, end of interview about the thing, where again, prefacing, we're actually just going to have a conversation now. Both of you, Cal, Steve, right? Let's say live imaging, the technology explodes tonight and it can never be used again. Do you feel like you're going to catch any less fish by not having it?
I mean, if I was using it as the point of...
No, the theoretical is you can't use it. It poof, snap your finger, it disappears.
Okay, here's my take, Steve. Yeah. I wish it never happened, but it did.
Right.
Okay? I wish it never happened, but it did. If it got banned tomorrow,
no
I'd
effect.
Be happy.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I would catch as many fish, but everyone might mean more. Everyone might be more exciting. And to be honest with you, I'd be right back where I was, known as more than anybody or as much as the best on the lake. And I could hold my own no matter what.
Right.
You know, I'll tell you, I only use.
Hold on, like, what were you saying, Cal?
Go ahead, Cal.
I said, I don't even own one. Don't have one, guide for 30 years, don't have one, won't buy one, never.
Gotcha. Right, it's not going to have impact.
So the deal where I'm coming at is I only use it a lot, maybe 40% of the time. And I use it more when the fishing's really tough to try and figure out what are these fish actually doing when we can't get them to do what we want them to do. I've learned so much that if it got banned, I've already learned so much from it that it's already going to put me way above where I was. I try, after 40 years of this, I still try and learn something every day. And I probably learned more about fish behavior and what they do either after the cast, after the chase, you know, what they're doing on those tough days where you can't hardly see a fish come off structure, what they're actually doing, than I would ever have believed. And, you know, I wouldn't bother me a bit. It really wouldn't bother me a bit, because I really do love the excitement and the thrill of that unexpected shit that happens when it comes to muskie fishing, you know?
Yeah, it's again, I think that's the first to admit, I mean, I've said it talking to you before, Steve, it's like, okay, I've learned so much from this, but then you go, you know, I think it's at least measured with what you're doing, that with the statement where, yeah, you can run one. I mean, because it's one of those deals where it is invaluable for patterning. It is invaluable for understanding bait fish activity. But like you said, you take it away, it just turns my stomach, because it's one of these things of like, as if we needed something else that was a hot button issue in muskie fishing. Because one thing I'll say is this, and surely you guys can understand this. It feels, at a certain point, the sport feels like a browbeat of, okay, it went from, you're holding them the wrong way, you're measuring the wrong way, you're doing all this, you know what I'm saying? Like, to somebody that's just kind of trying to enjoy it, as somebody that's not participating in it professionally, it just becomes just a beating over the head about, there's so much stuff. There's just like, okay, you're holding the fish wrong, you're looking at the fish wrong, you're you know, where it almost takes the piss out of it. You see where I'm going with that? Where it's just like, okay, debate. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, and I feel like a whole other can of worms. You look at some of the big conservation groups in this, like, okay, we're worried about conserving muskies, but we're going to, every fish that's 30 inches better be measured or it doesn't count for the big leaderboard in the sky. Right?
Yeah.
You can't win all the, you don't win your imaginary points if you don't measure them all. Because,
you know, I don't hardly even measure a fish.
Well, I think what you guys are doing is noble, but on the other hand, you sit here and look at all the other shit that musky anglers have to eat, where you go, Terry Knutson of Vander Lake, wherever, doesn't believe that was a real 31, right? And he's really torn up about it. You shouldn't get your points on the imaginary big board of musky fishing, and you might not be musky badass of the month because Terry Knutson thinks it's a 30 and a half. It's not a true 31. Measure it again.
Right?
Let's put his effing eyeballs all over the bump board. Let's smear him about. Right, let's smear his autoimmune system off as much as we can, because we gotta get points on the board. Which is, on the other hand, you go, hey man, frickin', can we not just drill these fish all day long? You know what I'm saying? It's kind of that weird dynamic of what I think you guys are up against, of just the culture of it, of like, where does the shit end? Right.
Well, sooner or later, it's got to. It's got to come around full circle. I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know how long it's going to take for everybody to wake up, but it's got to, or we won't have it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things of, like, definitely in Canada, where there's no governmental, let's say you put 10,000 musky boats on Eagle Lake and they all just smear it for a week and they kill every single one. They're not coming back. And I understand your concern. You know what I'm saying? There's probably not a gigantic Canadian budget to replenish the native strain of Eagle Lake. It ain't happening. Right.
So it's never going to happen.
There's no budget for it. So it's kind of like one of those things. You go, hey, we can't afford fish, much less why would we want stocked fish, you know? And I think that's always the dynamic of where you look at. And I think the fear, and correct me if I'm wrong, again, we're into the just all opinion thing. Some people might look at this and go, well, you guys are mad that other people are catching fish. I say bullshit. And I don't think that's the case, right? You know, you've caught enough, who hasn't? But on the other hand, when you go, by the time a governing body comes in and regulates this stuff, it's too late, right? It's just too far gone. I mean, you know, Steve, straight out, do you think it's the sharpshooting? Do you think it's the group sharpshooting? Do you think it's just the catch rates are too high? Just what is it at the end of the day?
I think it's all of that and more. And that's why we put together all them other bullet points, because all them other bullet points all add up. And we're just trying to slow things down till things do come full circle. You know what I'm saying? And besides limiting or asking people to limit their scope usage to on structure, you know, with a single pole and electrics, right, you know, and stuff. All them other bullet points are just as important in the big picture, you know?
Something that scared me, and you and I think I sent it to you as I was driving home last year, and I sent you that report out of Mississippi on crappie, where they said, okay, yes, the population has been decimated, and you know, there's no longer can this body of water sustain its previous krill limits, and it'll take decades to recover. And, you know, that's kind of the thing of, like, the fear, I guess, of, you know, how do we know? Again, in people, you could poke holes in your theories, because you don't have a mortality study of Eagle Lake regarding this subject. You don't have probably even a krill study. And one could argue, well, it's anecdotal. And like I said, I asked about the floaters earlier and said confirmation bias, just playing devil's advocate. But on the other hand, you go, I get what you're saying. The more muskies you catch, the more potential mortality there is always, right? But I think it's like one of those things, if 50% of the boats on Eagle Lake were doing this, it would be real bad.
Okay, here's something I want to interject, okay? This is about Eagle Lake.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping, because we are two musky fishermen. We fish with musky fishermen from all over the world, from really all over the world, even Europe, right?
Yep.
So we want to keep Eagle Lake the way it is. Okay. Do I care about if Minnesota is ruined? Do I care about if Northern Wisconsin gets ruined? I could say no. I only care about Eagle Lake, but that's not the case. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that it goes forward, but if it doesn't get anything done in Minnesota, if it doesn't get anything done in Wisconsin, if it doesn't get anything down in Virginia or wherever.
Yeah.
When you come to Eagle Lake, you fish them the way that slogan says, preserve the resource,
right,
and the challenge. You come to Eagle and you fish them the way it's been forever.
Well,
you can go back and scope the living shit out of anything you want.
Do whatever you want. Yeah, do that shit in your backyard, but not in mine. And something, I guess, I've lived through it. Cal obviously lived through it the whole bit, was the night fishing ban. I mean, you mentioned that earlier, but I, a lot of people don't understand that was, I've heard people go, it's for angler safety. No, they don't care about you. You can wreck and die out in Portage Bay all you want in the middle of the night. That was to rebound the walleye population, and the extent of, and I think probably the veracity of this argument, there's probably no better place on earth where you would say it plays, because you go, okay, Loch Sewell, good luck going out there and live scoping that son of a bitch, right? I would love to see you live scope, good luck. So you that trickling downhill is Eagle, which is that's it. You know what I'm saying? Of far, far as the big three, where you go.
Well, Lake of the Woods, there's some guys being concerned, especially at certain times of the year,
mm-hmm,
when the fish really, really bunch up in the channels and shit like that, mm-hmm. But it's so huge, compared to Eagle that,
mm-hmm,
it would take longer for you probably to see the results. But again, once you see the results, it's too late.
Yeah.
So we hope it trickles to everywhere. We're basically the tip of the spear of this movement, and we're proud of it. At least I am.
I am. Yeah, sure.
What do you think, Steve? As far as something that I haven't seen with my own two eyes, but I've heard reports or stories thereof, right? Say guide X, Y, and Z is they're toting around suckers in the middle of summer and dropping them on fish, where it's like it's not just like casting to the open water fish. It's like, okay.
Well, I don't buy that.
Okay.
Because as I've been pretty heavy into live bait from the very beginning. I just got the first quick set rig to get to save fish and get away from the old single hook mentality and everything else.
Uh-huh.
In summertime, sucker fishing just don't work. You can't keep them alive.
No, I'm saying as far as like dropping live bait on light scope fish in open water.
Oh, well, I'm sure I haven't done that, but I'm sure it can be done, it'd be tough to do during the warm water months because you can't keep the bait alive.
Gotcha.
If you could scope them like that and get right over top of them, put it right in front of them, I'm sure it'd be really deadly. But that to me is...
I'm just curious. And I don't know if that's just kind of telephone game or rumor. You know what I'm saying? When it's like, this is what's happening or what's not happening. And I mean, in the reality of the matter, I'd say that I was trying to get it out of you earlier, but something that I think that was, I conveyed was, okay, here's fleets of boats. Here's multiple boats banded together doing this almost fleet style. Is that true?
I've seen three boats side by side, you know, 100 feet apart, going down the middle of the lake in a coordinated effort, which accounts to what, 1,000 feet swath?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, I can't. I mean, you know,
I'm not saying that I saw it once.
Right.
But that's just an example how people just can just naturally be abusive. You know what I mean?
Right.
Take things over the top. Right. You know,
and then
laugh about it.
Well, I mean, again, it's one of those. It's definitely, you know, I remember having a conversation. I actually talked to Sharon Crane recently, the crane bait, Bill's wife, you know, and they're laughing about my grandfather. Bill caught him, you know, in the 50s going around the corner and releasing a fish like he was insane, right? Literally, Bill yeah. Crane comes around the corner and his John boat, my grandfather's turning one back loose. Like, what are you doing, buddy? You just let food go, you know? And yeah. And then a few years later, the two of them are banding together to talk about some of the very early catch and release. And that was lunacy, and it was heresy, and it was akin to what you're doing, which is brave, because you go, screw you, we're catching fish. What does it matter? Right?
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, Booker chimed in, which is a rarity, you know, and I know Joe's not one to put his neck on the line on much, but the fair chase thought, you know, is it a, and again, just opinion. You talk about preserving the challenge. Is it no longer, do you think it's like no longer fishing, or is it just kind of like just taking the piss out of it, you think, with the live scope ordeal? Like just guts on it. Which kind of, you just go, this is bullshit, and then, you know, are we being old men?
Some guys will have the argument that it's exciting as hell, but I just don't see it, you know. I mean, I think it's just, you know, more about the catch than it is about the thrill of the hunt, of the chase. So that musky fishing is more like a hunt versus walleyes catching, you know. And, you know, so that's why another reason why we're going to limit it to one scope is for the walleye fishermen. I mean, let's face it, it's a two fish a day limit. 95% of all walleyes on Eagle Lake over 18 inches are being released, you know, but yet people that don't only get to fish once a year, they see that, you know, a live scope pole walleye fishing really helps them to catch some fish.
Right.
You know, I mean, in my opinion, I think there's too many walleyes in Eagle Lake right now, and they should...
Kill them all.
Making a six fish, 16-inch limit for 3 or 4 years. You know, I mean,
right.
So the Conservation Congress did such a amazing deal, not just getting the night fishing ban in, but they tirelessly, with all their own money, built and restored all these spawning and created new spawning habitats. And on Eagle, there's creek spawners, there's shoal spawners, there's swamp spawners, there's no matter what the conditions, there's a huge spawn comes off every year, right. You know, and if you get too many, you can collapse the forage base of all the young of the year, or 2 and 3 year whitefish and Cisco. So but you know, there's nothing wrong with catching 100 walleyes a day, even if you can only keep two. And to be quite honest, what I see, a lot of people don't even keep them anymore except for a few shore lunches or supper in their cabin.
Yeah. Something I want to ask you, because it's funny, you know, I mentioned earlier, and just getting to opinion, you know, when something gets used and abused, the regulations are usually pretty harsh, right? And it's kind of like, you know, and this is personal opinion, you know, I don't think it's out of the scope of reality. And I had somebody kind of mention this to me, which was, okay, at a certain point, if this is detrimental to musky fishing, then you're just going to be limited to your one fish a day, catch and release one. You know what I'm saying? At a certain point, like, You have to minimize contact, and how do you preserve that resource, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, tournaments in Canada, you know, you're only allowed, you know, to measure two, you know, a day.
Yeah.
And they're measured in the water.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to kill a fish, it has to be over the legal limit, theoretically, to even bring it in the boat.
Right.
Now, they let it slide. But in tournaments, you have to measure them in the water. You know, at least the big tournaments, like on Lake of the Woods that Danny fishes.
Right.
And he came right out and told me. He said, "Dad, you wouldn't believe it. The difference between letting a fish go, releasing a fish that you never take out, that you take out of the water, is totally different than a fish that you bring into the boat for 5 minutes and take multiple pictures, maybe drop it and stuff like that." He said the fish that you catch and keep them in the water, release them at the side of the boat, they're like bullets exploding out of your hand.
It's amazing. I changed my whole program about 3 years ago, where I just went, okay, it's up and for the picture and it's down, right? There's no bump. There's none of this crap. There's none of it. He's unhooked and don't even hold their tails. Just put them. I haven't held a tail in 3 years. And it's just like the second they go in the water, they're gone. You know, it's just so much faster opposed to, you know, and it's just one of those animals where you go, I've caught shit before. And I'm sure you guys have before. Well, you're a guide and you probably catch way more fish and your mortality's higher. I'm going, it might be, but I don't feel like it is just from a matter of proficiency and handling. Like the speed at which one of us can have a fish in the net, get the hooks out, get him up, get him for a picture and get it sent on its way is like just far more rehearsed and practiced. You know what I'm saying? It's just like fast. And again, you know, the argument could always be made for you know, a lot of it's handling. I don't know. What's your opinion, Steve? Do you think it matters whether it's scoped or whether it's this, that, the other? It's just a matter of handling in general? Or what's your thoughts? Or Cal?
I think, you know, if all is equal, you know, the fish is, whether it's caught scoped or whether it's caught traditional casting, if all is equal then the handling becomes the wild card. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's something to it. But anyway, well, hell, we've been at this for a minute, folks. I hope you leave this listening to these two gentlemen with understanding. I can speak for both of them. I don't think either of you want people to not catch fish. I just think you want to probably summarize it by saying, why don't we preserve one of the most pristine musky environments there is? Would that about get around it?
Yeah. You know? And we hope our efforts, you know, pass on and move forward and help other people's fisheries at the same time.
There you go.
Because up to this point, nobody's done nothing but argue.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Well, guys, thanks for being on the show. I'm sure we'll hear more about this in the future.
Thanks,
Jay. Thank
you. Well, Jay, lot to digest there. What do you say, my man?
A lot to think about.
And there will be digestion at the Muskie Shop Bash. July
19th, Saturday, Minocqua, Wisconsin. Be there, be square. It's the biggest sale of the year.
Moving on. Like I said, I think this is an important topic that one formulates their own opinion on, and you know, we're at the opinion formulating stages, in my opinion, if you will. But Jaybird, are you getting out? Are you going to just go shellac them? I mean, you've shoveled out the snow. What more excuses do you need to go outdoors?
Trailer lights.
Trailer. Oh, give me a break.
that's, I got some coming Tuesday. So, yeah, besides that, yeah, like to get the boat out today. I can find a spot that doesn't, allow problems getting the boat in the water, aka too many rigs in the way. But, hey, Yeah.
What do you do?
That's opening week. That's opening weekend.
There you have it, guys. Have a great opening weekend. I mean, we're just Minnesota. It's on the cusp, believe it or not. Yep. Canada's closer than it ever has been. Anyway.
Yeah.
Jaybird, say la, la, la,
la. Night, guys. Thank you.
Later.
Yeah, you sitting on the couch eating potato chips. It's time to stop being a loser and learn how to make $1 million muskie fishing.
How to Make $1 Million Muskie Fishing. The new book by Jay Essie. That's me. It's the only book you'll ever need. Learn how to fish and how to profit from it.
Yeah, all it takes is for you to buy this book and learn how to become a muskie millionaire like Jay Essie.
You want to make big bucks and catch countless big girls? It's time to buy my new book, How to Make $1 Million Muskie Fishing, by me, Jay Essie.
Are you ready to catch big girls?
Big girls?
You ready to get slimed?
Slimed.
It's the prime time to buy JSE's new book, How to Make $1 Million Muskie Fishing. You know you need it.
You know you need it.
You know you want it.
You know you want it.
It's time to get JSE's How to Make $1 Million Muskie Fishing. Jay, tell them how to get the book. How much it is.
If you're done being a loser, it's time to take it to the next step. Call me and I'll sell you how to make $1 million muskie fishing for one easy payment of $1 million.
Operators are standing by.